Wednesday, January 29th, 1988, will come to order at 1:46. Or 1:44. Let the record show that Representative Pierce, Representative Hudson, Representative Springer, and Chairman Representative Cato are present. Representative Boucher has been excused. Representative Miller is in North Pole. The town of North Pole for our visitors. I will. Okay. We have with us today Representative Gall, who is going to sit in on our meeting, and I would like to present to the group Senator Ann Anderson from she's from Olympia. She actually is from Acme, Washington. Ann, Senator, would you like to join us at the table, please?
Oh, thank you. I don't even get to do this in my own house.
We're a little more congenial, Senator.
We don't get that big deal.
We have other people in the audience. I'd like to extend a welcome to them. Very happy to have them here. And we're going to start the meeting out with Representative Hudson's white paper, and he'll take a few minutes. Actually, that was what this work session was called for. However, we've had the opportunity with the delegation in town to take up some other business. So Representative Hudson has sent out a white paper, and at this time, we'll hear from him on the white paper. All of you, no representatives.
All right. Well, Madam Chair, since this is a work session, I guess we can be a little informal here. And the reason that I put this white paper together, I think this is kind of important to so we can open up the discussion here, was to stimulate discussion and to create some debate. I had some very strong feelings about things that weren't happening into the system, and I had some strong feelings about, obviously, the background of the system that I could share. Most of you probably know that I was the director of the Marine Highway System for 4 years back in the 70s, mid-70s. But more important, I've been a Juneau resident for the last 15 years now, and I think it's from that perspective that really encouraged me to put down some of my thoughts so that people could examine them and hopefully come up with their own conclusions and we could start developing some changes. The original system, I think, was adequate back in the early days when we commissioned the three blue canoes. And since then, of course, it's expanded. We've expanded to Tenneke Springs and Pelican and Goon Hollis and out to the west, all the way out to Dutch Harbor from Kodiak. And so there has been a great deal of changes that have occurred in the ferry system. Today's system is much more complex. The costs are great deal more expensive. 60 some odd million dollars is in this year's budget that will be at least made up of revenues of about $30 million and about another $33 million being requested from the general funds. At the same time, while general fund costs to maintain the system are increasing, revenues are shrinking. So I looked at those two opposed incidents and felt that the pressure was on and that we had to start thinking about the future. Meanwhile, the fleet is aging. We just introduced a 25-year recognition just the other day. And from my experience as an old Coast Guard commander with 20 years of experience, many systems begin to decommission their fleet when they start hitting 20 to 25 years. And certainly when they start looking at 35 and 40-year-old vessels, you're looking at hulls that might look good if you paint them up, but wiring systems and piping systems and propulsion systems and drive systems and things like this that just simply are getting to the point of diminishing returns. So the age of the fleet was a concern that I had. Many starts and stops. This system, vessels start and stop more than, a tramp steamer that might operate from Seattle to Japan. Those vessels can run forever because they just take off and then they chug, 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 and steam across the ocean and land again and take off. Ours don't. They start and stop many, many times up and down the coast. So vessel replacement cost was a big concern. $60 million, perhaps, to replace one of the Taku-class vessels. What are we going to do if we have to replace them all three within a short period of time? Where's the bucks going to come from? So when we take a look at all of these things, and we look back at the plans I have to ask the question, with the indulgence of our chairman here, what happened to the plans to replace the Tustamina? Where's the money that was originally designed to replace the Tustamina? Where's the money that was allocated a couple of years ago for the fast ferry in Southeast Alaska? We need some integrity in our implementation plan, and it is that now, as a legislator, at any rate, that I'm trying to charge, looking ahead. So I have put down in my white paper, and I urge you to look through it, read it. You don't have to agree with everything. Some of these things are really bold, new concepts, and quite frankly, I suspect that many of them won't work. It wasn't my intention to try to give you an absolute blueprint. It was my intention to give some strong considerations for ideas. But you can't look at one element, for example, the question of whether or not we should operate out of Seattle or Bellingham, isolatedly as a single issue. You have to make the determination as to whether or not, if you reduce the amount that these mainline, big expensive mainline vessels have to operate on the lower end and also on the upper end by stopping the mainliners in Juneau and implementing a fast ferry system to the north, what can you do with that cumulative time? What can you do with the time of the vessels that now go all the way into Prince Rupert if you were able to put a fast ferry in there and essentially create a road between Prince Rupert and Ketchikan, just as we would be doing to the north? If we tie the system closer and closer together and the communities closer and closer together so that we have frequency of service, reduce cost of service, and in the long term, reduce cost of replacing this major rolling stock, then we begin to see the spin-off into the economies of our communities. I can see where a fast ferry that operates 4 to 6 times a day at a reduced cost between Juneau and Haines and Skagway would increase the traffic between Juneau and Haines and Skagway, would increase the traffic coming out of Whitehorse through Haines and Skagway into Juneau, and then ultimately open it up into the whole southeastern economic corridor here. I see the social, economical, and I mean things like we have a University of Alaska Southeast. If we were able to have cheaper, faster, more frequent services between us communities in Southeast Alaska, the university would be perhaps more accessible. We could have a transfer of use of the university, medical services and attention, shopping, so that we have some commonality in those areas. And with that in mind, Madam Chair, I don't want to take up all the time here, but I have a white paper there. I think that the most important thing that we have to do here is we have to reduce the mainline runs. We have to implement some of the smaller, faster ferries, so that when we start replacing vessels, we don't replace a $60 million vessel, we might have to replace a $12 million vessel. And we have information here on a vessel that cost about $12 to $15 million, carries 33 vehicles, 100 passengers, and does it at 40 to 45 miles per hour. That makes the time between Juneau and Haines, that's 40 minutes, not 4 hours. And all of a sudden, you can go up and photo the eagles in the morning and have a nice meal in the restaurant and come back and you're home free. I haven't covered the Southwest, although, and that was out of total respect to my chairman. It's not in my area. I do have some strong feelings. When we start dealing into that element, I'll also participate in there too. Access to the capital, access to the Southeast, interchange between Alaska and Southeast, inter-Alaska and Southeast Alaska, Alaska and Southeast Alaska, and the Yukon and Alaska, exchange between the communities in Southeast Alaska, the ability to have more frequent, cheaper runs so that kids can go with their bands over to different communities, so that we can support emerging fisheries into the island communities, so that we can increase tourism, so that we can support the economic development programs of all the communities of Southeast Alaska in this case. And finally, the system be user-friendly and we get some morale back on the fleet. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Hudson. We have with us a member of the Juneau business community, particularly the waterfront, Mr. Killeen, right? Did I pronounce that correctly?
Colony.
I knew I was screwing you. That's the teacher. And also, Director Davidson, George Davidson, is here and he will answer any questions. Moving on to the Marine Highway question and the draft you have before you, I want everyone to recognize the word up here. It says draft. my own approach to this, I would prefer that this did not get out on the street to every Tom, Dick, and Harry that doesn't see that word. Because it is merely a draft. It is not the final report. Am I correct, Mr. McAllister?
Correct.
And I don't mean that other people shouldn't have access to the draft in case they want to. But what I'm saying is that we don't want at any time to interpret this as the final report. But you always have to have a draft before you get something done. We also have Mr. Keith Gerken, the Deputy Commissioner of DOT. Keith, would you like to say a few words? Or would you, are you going to leave the presentation to Mr. McAllister?
Do you want to move on to Bellingham?
Or, yes, we always like to move on.
I think that we'd like to have the report from...
Yeah.
Isn't that what I said to begin with? I didn't think I'd change my mind.
I didn't know if you wanted us to respond to Representative Hudson's...
No, we're moving on to this.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, actually, I'd like to move right into that, and we have a short presentation which we gave yesterday to Transportation. Stan McAllister, Green Highways Planner, would like to run through that with you. I think you have in front of you not only the report, but some of his reference documents that he'll use in that. So I'll just get out of his way and let him walk through that with you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman. I'm Stan McAllister. I'm the Planning Chief for Marine Highways. I think what I'd like to do with the committee, if it's all right, is what we did yesterday in Senate Transportation, was just to review quickly the highlights of our draft report and then throw it open to questions.
I'm trying to figure out how the Senate, Mr. McAllister, excuse my interruption, how did the Senate get a chance to upstage us?
Good scheduling, I would suppose.
Just curious. Also only teasing.
Yes. The report you have before you is broken up into several basic sections. We stated our assumptions so that everybody would know where we were coming from with this. We looked at fuel savings as requested by legislative intent. We looked at labor savings, and we looked at lease savings and the relative quality of passenger facilities, and we laid out our conclusions. The assumptions, the Chairman and I have already had a brief discussion about that, were laid out, A, so that everybody could see them, and B, so that we would have a basis for holding both ports equal for comparison purposes. Obviously, the two locations are not equal, but for comparing fuel savings, labor savings, and trying to get at a fair comparison of both both ports, we made some assumptions. The assumptions that we made was that there would not be any change in traffic between Seattle and Bellingham, that there would be no change in Marine Highways tariffs between the two. We would be operating under the present labor agreements. The quality of facilities at Bellingham and Seattle would be equivalent. Obviously, they're not at the present, but for comparison purposes of operating costs and those sorts of things, we held those equal and assumed that they would be equivalent. And we assumed, perhaps subject to more scrutiny, that there is a continuing public mandate for the Marine Highway System to go to Puget Sound. That's a policy issue that may bear some further investigation, too. In the area of fuel savings, we went into the investigation assuming that there would be some fuel savings driven by the shorter distance to Bellingham. And while we found that was true, we found out that more importantly than distance, fuel price is what drives our fuel expense or our fuel costs. Historically, we found that fuel price has been higher at Bellingham than Seattle. And comments from suppliers indicate that that's because Seattle has traditionally been a somewhat more competitive market. On the other hand, the Bellingham representatives have been telling us, and we've been trying to extract from the suppliers, that fuel can be obtained cheaper at Bellingham because of the refineries there, which certainly stands to reason. To date, we haven't been able to get any firm information from the two refiners in Bellingham. So we're waiting for that. At the point that comes in, we will fold that into our calculations. So, but based on what we could find from the one supplier that would give us a firm price at the time for delivery at Bellingham, we ran our fuel calculations. On that basis, the shorter distance to Bellingham would save approximately $68,000 a year in fuel costs, based on the price quote we had at the time we were doing the analysis. That translates to approximately 2.4% of system fuel consumption and roughly 1.6% of annual system fuel expense. And if you look at the chart there on the next page, it's a little bit confusing, but I'd like to walk you through it because it shows very graphically what a very small difference in fuel price does to the distance saving. In the first box there on the left, the black box, that assumes that prices stay as they are now. We were quoted 58 cents a gallon back in October at the dock in Bellingham, and at that time the price was 56 and 3/4 cents at Seattle. That results in a net saving of $68,000 a year. If you hold the price at Bellingham at 58 cents, and the price goes down at Seattle by 3 cents, there is no fuel savings by the shorter distance to Bellingham. On the other hand, if you hold the price at 56 and 3/4 cents at Seattle, and the price at Bellingham goes up a couple of cents to 61 and a quarter cents, there's no real savings from the shorter distance. And finally, to show just how much it is price-driven, if the price comes down at Bellingham by 2 cents and stays the same at Seattle, it doubles your fuel savings. So the critical factor in fuel savings is not the distance involved, but the price you pay. And if we can get a favorable price at Bellingham, there are substantial savings to be had.
Mr. McAllister, might I interrupt you with a question?
Certainly.
We are talking now of only fuel savings.
Correct.
We're not talking about the amount of money it costs to fuel, to pull the ferry away from a dock and fuel somewhere else.
Correct. We're talking strictly fuel price.
Representative Sperrin?
I don't like that analysis either, because it's not on the same statistical base. You're talking strictly comparing fuel cost and savings based on price, but what isn't expressed in there is, for example, increased user service. If you hold to that statement here and says, since vessels will be running additional trips using the time savings, of course, if you operate the ferries, then it will burn fuel, and no matter where it runs around, it's going to burn fuel. But you, for the same cost, or assuming the fuel prices are the same, you get increased passenger service, and also you will get, from the standpoint of amortization, you're going to increase your efficiency unit. So,
yes.
So the fuel price in itself, while it may be one factor in the whole complex formula, isn't the whole story.
Correct. And okay. Your point is noted later on in the report.
Okay.
But the legislative intent direction that we were responding here to was to analyze the fuel savings available. So we did that. And that's what you see before you. On the issue of labor savings, which was the next specified topic, what we found was that by going to Bellingham under the existing labor agreements, there are no significant labor cost savings to be had. That's because the present agreements that we were working with here are based on the existing 7-day route cycle. And if you vary from that 7-day route cycle, it triggers various premium pay provisions in the agreements that begin to escalate costs significantly. Those specific provisions are minimum guarantee, wherein employees are guaranteed a minimum of 84 hours per assignment. Overtime, of course, if you run longer than a 7-day route cycle. Late arrival, similarly. And early callback for the off-duty crew. They're paid a premium if they're called back before they've had their full 7 days off. So all of those things combine to impact on both longer route cycles than 7 days and shorter route cycles than 7 days. So under present labor agreements, it's very difficult to access any labor savings through the time you save at Bellingham. Now, on the other side of that issue is the fact that The unions are all aware of this, and informally at least, in our discussions on this subject, they've indicated some flexibility in the negotiation process. They realize that that they can be more flexible on this issue too, but we don't have anything formal. We're just going into negotiations, and we don't really have anything to report there as yet. So that's the present situation with respect to labor savings. Chart on the following page is just a graphic demonstration of what occurs when you vary from that 7-day to cycle. Third point we were...
Just a minute, Representative Pierce.
When are the present labor agreements due for negotiation?
They expire in March, and negotiations are starting to get underway.
They expire next March.
This March.
Yeah, really. Okay. And then how long, in the past, how long have our agreements been?
3 years. It's been a fairly typical agreement period.
And how long would we likely agree to... If we change from Seattle to Bellingham, how long would we likely sign an agreement with Bellingham for?
Probably 1 year. Yeah, that's entirely up to the negotiation process with the board and what have you. Don't know.
I'd like to add a question to that. Frequently, I've found in labor negotiations, and this is extremely puzzling to me, but I have found that people work without a contract until negotiations are. Is there any perception this could occur, or has this occurred where they've worked without a contract until negotiations were resolved, and that sort of thing?
George, would you like to speak to that?
Historically, I'm not sure what they've done. It appears that there's a definite interest with the unions to try to have all the issues resolved before the end of the contract period. We started with ITU this week, start with MEBA next week, and MMP later on.
Representative Sparrow.
Yeah, apparently, I'm a land plumber, so I don't know if the biggest thing I ever ran is a 9.9 horse kicker, so I don't know much about that ferry and ship business. But it looks to me like, judging from the data here, that the cycling is pretty critical from labor standpoint and the operational standpoint, and it also looks, if I interpret page 8 right, that with the shortening of the distance, the net savings in time would be actually two additional trips in the summer and two in the winter, if I read that right. Okay, which is not really a significant figure. Now, and it also shows with that graph how critical the 7-day cycling is from the labor relations standpoint. How does those ferries, their present running schedule and the speed and everything they have, relate to the fuel consumption? Are they trying to run at a mechanical optimum, or is that more geared towards scheduling, or what is that relationship?
It's a trade-off between optimum cruising speed and the requirements of the schedule.
Okay, now, how does that correlate? In other words, what the crux of my question is going to be, if you have time savings now, and if you would want to take the present cycling in consideration from the time of travel time, mathematically you could do that with reduced speed.
Yes.
Right? And so, unless there's a mechanical optimum, would that result then, if you maintain the present timetable, would that result then in fuel savings?
Probably some. The ships are probably running a little faster than optimum on the present schedule, so there would be some fuel savings.
So at one time or another, if we want to come up with a formula that brings, whose end result is a factor that shows a plus or minus to present operations, one would have to make that type of a multiple choice formula, plugging the different factors in then, right?
And again, for purposes of the fuel savings analysis here, we assume schedules and running speeds that would access time savings, so that so that we could compare Bellingham against Seattle. If you vary the fuel speed and assume a different set of circumstances at Bellingham, then you have apples and oranges, and it's hard to compare.
Representative?
I just have to speak up. You know, several years ago, we discussed Bellingham versus Seattle. I had just left the ferry system, and the report came out saying it was going to cost more money to operate from a shorter distance than it was from Seattle. And they used a lot of the very same status quo type of arguments in that study. You've got to recognize that if you're going to operate shorter distance and you're going to perhaps have rotating trips and gain additional trips from Bellingham to Seattle, that there's some value to that. There is a significant reduction in response to your question, Henry, by reducing away from the top speeds, particularly if you put the Matanuska and the Malaspina on that run. If you operate them at top speed, they burn fuel like mad. You reduce them just a little bit, just a small bit, and you reduce the cost or the amount of consumption considerably. I know that from my background and experience. The other thing is I agree with the chairman, I hope we don't circulate this too much, because you have to consider the fact that now Bellingham offers the opportunity to modify your labor agreements so that you can go on perhaps a 8-on, 8-off instead of 7-on, 7-off, or 10-on, 10-off. There's all sorts of opportunities. And that was one of the reasons that I put in my white paper some of these opportunities. And the additional thing is that I don't think you take into consideration the amount of money that you have the extra crew call-outs by having to get underway and go take in the fuel and bring, come back to Seattle and call out the crew again. Every time you call out a crew, as you know, George, you have a lot of premium pay. You have to call out so many people to handle lines, and you have to pay them at the premium pay rate. And the same thing with engineers down in the engine room and things like that. A lot of those things aren't in here. And I hope when you put out your final report, it'll truly make this an analysis of, you know, you could, if you had two ports that were right sitting in the Port of Seattle, and you were just simply trying to measure the size of one and the cost of one against the other one, you could just make an apples and apples type of thing. But when you're talking about something that gives you the opportunity to modify schedules, to increase the number of runs in a given period of time, to increase the traffic and the revenues without appreciably increasing the labor costs, that gives you the opportunity to do some preventative maintenance with some of that time that you don't have now. You know, every hour that you run that ship, there's a value to it. It's in the records back there. There's a value for every extra hour that you run that thing duplicating the roads. And I just really urge you to take a little more time and pull some of that stuff out, and I'll be happy to help you try to find some of those figures if you need it. But this is coming out exactly like the last one, which is essentially to say we can't change the labor agreements, and therefore we don't get any advantage by operating a little less or operating more runs. The fuel costs are more expensive. I doubt seriously if we really negotiated with Bellingham, well, we wouldn't get cheaper fuel than we're getting in Seattle right now. But, you know, if you just call up and ask for the fuel prices, you're not going to get that. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, but it's a feeling that I have.
Madam Chair, if I may respond.
Yes.
Mr. Hudson, what you say is true.
I know it is.
But we were specifically directed to answer certain questions, and we attempted to do that in a manner that was fair to both ports. What you're suggesting is what we would like to do, and what we're trying to do with our system plan effort, which is to find an optimum way of running the system. This report doesn't begin to do that, and we recognize that.
What you're saying, that's like music to my ears then, and I knew from my conversation with your director before that certainly we had talked about a lot of these things, and I know that those are the ideas that are in his mind, and certainly in his negotiating staff and some of those people. The mere fact that the labor unions are willing to sit down with you and talk to you. The only way you change labor negotiated conditions is to change the operating conditions. The operations of the ship runs the labor contracts, not the labor contracts running the operations of the ship. So I'm pleased to hear you say that, and I hope that we'll all take that into consideration. We'll take this one as a boilerplate. You know, if we couldn't do anything differently, this may be the way it is. But I hope you'll also put one together that uses some of the creative thinking that, and again, all of what I put in my white paper certainly you can't use, but use some of those creative juices to try to come up with the real value, because that's what I was trying to get to.
Representative Gall.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess what occurs to me, I was going to wait till the end, but maybe it's worthwhile just to bring it up so as you continue, you might reference it a bit. To my mind, the values that we're seeking are values to the public. Saving operating costs, changing operating procedures to make the system work better only are going to result in something that is better is providing better service to the people. And I think the people are concerned not only with the quality and levels of service in terms of passenger and freight service, they're also concerned with a well-run system that's economical and doesn't end up costing them dollars out of their school budget or dollars out of their pocket more than is necessary. But I've heard some of the comments from Bellingham. I'm going to read these documents. I'm looking forward to hearing from the other port. But $68,000. What are we talking about? This exercise we're doing here today is costing $68,000. It's the cost of a special assistant. It's the cost of. It just doesn't even compare to the $60 million in the marine transportation budget. So I don't see that as having any significant impact on this entire issue. What seems to me important is if there are significant cash savings to be made, we should identify them. I don't care if it's in salaries or fuel costs or what. And I would hope that your study can go deeper than just the questions that have been asked you by the legislature, but also into the broader implications of what kind of management changes would be relevant to really improving the quality of service. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for. I appreciate this discussion. I think the points are valid, but my concern is going to be if we save $100,000 or $400,000, what are the trade-offs for the public? What are the downsides of continuing as we're doing? What are the benefits of making a port change? What are the downsides of making a port change? Because I'm going to have to explain it to the public on the basis of what they're getting out of it. And they're not going to be able to see the benefit of a change of whatever it is, a tenth of a percent or something in the cost of operation. But that's not to suggest that that's not an important factor. I just like to suggest, as I think Representative Hudson was doing, that these little slices are certainly what your mandate may have been, but I, for one, would be interested in, if you're not ready to provide an analysis of the real service changes and the comments that you're getting from the public as to whether or not they are looking for those service changes or not. That, to me, is the question, and that's the way I'm going to have to provide the people with information. I'm going to have to say, well, this decision is being made to either move the port or what have you, and here's what it's going to mean to you. It's going to mean more trips or less trips or a way to get to Seattle or not a way to get to Seattle. And I would hope that as we develop the exercise, we can get good, clear answers to that. One last comment, if I could, is that when we talk about changing the schedule or lengthening stops at ports, there's only, I'd say, one port in the entire run that could clearly benefit from an expanded stop, and that's Skagway. And with every other port that is on the line somewhere, it depends very, very greatly on what the trade-offs are. I think we've seen tremendous backlash against thinking of the Marine Highway as a tourist operation. And it's very nice for the communities if it provides some more time for tourists to go around, but the people who are going to be constantly providing comment and pressure on the ferry system or the people who depend on it, the residents of Southeast Alaska. And I would hope that would be a basic part of the parameters of consideration as well. So I say these things not to suggest that I have any knowledge or opinion of what the outcomes would be, but only that the discussions are going to have to go way beyond plus or minus $68,000 to have a bearing on the public that I represent. Thank you very much.
A couple of comments. First of all, this is the first of two reports that address the specific issues included in the legislative intent. There is a second report coming on the service alternatives that were listed that goes a lot farther along the lines that you suggest there, comparing the costs and benefits of those various service alternatives that we're suggesting. The other aspect of things, again, is the master plan effort that's trying to get at a lot of those things. That balanced against the fact that we do have to make a decision in the next year or so as to our southern terminus location and the facilities we're going to use and that sort of thing. All add together to, what you and Representative Hudson suggests is exactly what we're trying to get at, whether it appears immediately or not.
Well, I appreciate that, and I didn't mean to interrupt your presentation. I guess I did.
The purpose of the presentation is to hear these issues anyway. I mean, that's why we're here. But, to wind up, quickly.
Madam Chair, could I just add something to what Stan just said? Because I think in some ways we're
Keith Gergen for the record.
Thank you. We're getting more to the issue that really interests us most. One of the comments Representative Hudson made today in his paper is that some decisions in Marine Highways have been made really in isolation. They've been taken piece by piece rather than looking at all the impacts of a decision, all the opportunities that might be available. And Stan's correct, we've got some other pieces that we've been working on. We've got the master plan that we've been working on. And I think that there are some general management questions in addition to all those, which and the labor contracts, which we're very much focusing on as having a much greater impact than simply the question of whether we go to Seattle or Bellingham. In terms of the ridership, I've forgotten exactly the numbers. We're talking about less than 20,000 people getting on to Seattle a year out of almost 300,000 people in the system. It's not the biggest question, and it's not the one that's going to drive a lot of these other questions. There's a lot of other things that need to be done, and we haven't responded formally to Representative Hudson's paper, but in some ways we're talking more about that now than we are about Bellingham, and I think that's really a better focus, and I think that we appreciate a lot of those comments, and not only because of where they come from, but because they are questions which we have ourselves and ones we would like to begin to address. So I think in some ways we're really, the focus of this meeting is changing, but I think it's appropriate in some ways. There are some bigger questions and we're interested in examining.
Representative Hudson.
Yes, Madam Chair. Yeah, Keith, I really agree with you. And in response to Representative Galls, I know where he's coming from. He's representing people up into the northern corridor here, and they want to know whether or not they're going to be able to get to Seattle. They want to know whether or not they're going to have to stop at a longer times and things like that. And there have to be some of those changes. But what I would suggest is that if you pursue the course that you're pursuing and looking at some of these other socioeconomic interests and look at not just Seattle-Bellingham, but look at Seattle-Bellingham coupled with a fast ferry to the north. And then how what could you do then by taking somebody, say, from Haines, who could six times a day in an hour be in Juneau and get on a vessel that would have perhaps maybe three or four, five or six during the summer, more trips that they could make because we've reduced two ends of this thing. And we've reduced the cost, therefore we don't have to go to the legislature and ask for another $3 million more each year. Or we can give less expense, the cost to travel the system. You know, there's a lot of things we can do. We can sell a trip from Haines or Skagway down through Juneau and all the way to Bellingham and sell them a ticket that puts them on a fast ferry, on a hydrofoil. If they're cars, they can drive because they're right on a road. If they're foot passengers and they want to get off in downtown Seattle, we can sell them a ticket on a hydrofoil that'll pick them up there. Just walk off on one ship and onto the hydrofoil in an hour on Elliott Bay, and they're into downtown Seattle. There are things that can be done that satisfies every's interest, reduces the cost of the system, increases the traffic up and down, and really generates bucks. And I hope that the Transportation Department does consider the economic impact on communities in Southeast Alaska by virtue of providing opportunity to offer people a way to spend their money in Southeast Alaska and not just travel through. Because for some every person that goes through Juneau at 3 a.m. in the morning or arrives at Haines at 10 o'clock at night or something like that is money lost. You know, the reason Prince Rupert became a giant town in a little old location it's at because of the ferry system. We can almost transfer that industry to Ketchikan and Juneau, for example, which really boosts the economy of Southeast Alaska. Those are exciting things to me, and that's the reason that I wrote up some of the things in my report.
Representative Gall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I agree with almost everything that was just stated. The only point that I'd have to make is that using the vessel for its economic benefits in terms of depositing people at a port is important, but in my opinion, cannot be allowed to make it impossible for a citizen who needs to get from, say, Skagway to Juneau to have to spend 6 or 8 hours in Haines on the way. The difference in cost is between, say, you know, $80, $70 to fly, and $12 or $15 or whatever it is, $16 to take the ferry. And a lot of the folks who or in my district are not traveling on per diem, and they require that cost-efficient service. It'll get them from one place to another. The only comment I wanted to make, though, was to express some pleasure that the discussion is about Seattle and Bellingham, because one of the things that is most hotly opposed in rural Southeast is the idea that people will have to go to a foreign country in order to get to Washington State. And as long as the discussion is between Washington ports, I think it's healthy. When it becomes a question of Washington versus British Columbia terminus, then it becomes a very fiery issue in my region. But I agree with what Representative Hudson was saying. I don't think the issue is so much where the boat stops as how people get from point to point. And if there's an integrated system that is going to be stable, I think defining that system and ensuring it provides the service is really the task ahead, and I appreciate the dialogue. It certainly is enlightening to me. Thank you.
Thank you.
I will go ahead and conclude, and then we can carry it wherever you'd like. The last issue specifically presented to us was a comparison of police savings and relative quality of passenger facilities offered by Bellingham and Seattle. And both, of course, have their advantages and disadvantages and some unknowns. And those are listed in the report and discussed in summary. They aren't dealt with in detail. And most of those issues need to be refined before this is finalized and before a decision is made. But Bellingham offers a shorter trip distance. Bellingham has allocated capital funding for a terminal facility. Dockside fueling is permissible at Bellingham, which would save us some operational headaches and money and time over Seattle. And Bellingham has had a consistent and aggressive port marketing effort, which could be a great benefit to the Marine Highway system. Disadvantages to Bellingham, the time savings at Bellingham would affect our stewards' revenues. If stewards' revenues would go down, people would have to spend less money on the ships, but it would affect our revenues. Because of the shorter trip, our steward revenues are tied directly to the time people are on the ship, so there would be a fiscal impact, and that's the point of this of that item.
I have noted here in my draft to show what you mean. Just to make a statement, steward revenues are going to be down, doesn't tell me anything.
Sure. We will try to do that.
So I would like to, having known one steward very, very well, who is now retired, maybe we get some of his ideas and steward revenues would go up no matter what we did.
Yeah. Well, that goes to the whole issue of marketing that Representative Hudson brought up in his white paper. I mean, there are a number of things that need to be done, both on and off the ship, in marketing, that affect that. But on a strictly Bellingham versus Seattle basis,
Bellingham.
No way, put it back up.
The point. Can I just comment on that?
Yes.
I'll be interested also in that. The only thing I could possibly think that you must be thinking about is the bar revenues. Because I think if people know that they've got a shorter period of time in order to access the dining room, they'll just simply get in there when they can access it. And for the most part, you have an open dining room now, thanks to me. Some people think to.
Try to see if we can't quantify that. Some other disadvantages to Bellingham. The terminal has to be built, so it's not a place we can go tomorrow. There is a lead time involved. There are use conflicts at the Bellingham facility that have to be worked out. It is a commercial cargo facility, and whatever arrangement is made, we have to work those out, such that we have priority of landing and that sort of thing, so that our schedule aren't interrupted.
So you don't have any feelings of concern that they won't be worked out?
No.
Hasn't Bellingham pretty much assured you that
there's no name, place,
and price? And,
yeah. Oh, there's no real concern that they won't, but it's an item that has to be worked out that hasn't been yet, and we're just trying to get everything out on the table with this.
Could I just ask you, do you have a way for the public in Alaska to provide input on this entire...
One of the things I'm coming to.
Thank you, Mr. Collins.
A number of other things have to be established at Bellingham, and they all have cost impacts and that sort of thing. The rest of the list there all goes to those sorts of things. The same general proposition is true at Seattle as well. I mean, it has advantages as well as disadvantages. It's in an established location for good or ill. The good side of that is people know where it is. The bad side of it is that it's in a congested area that's hard to get to.
Its expansion abilities are limited because of the location, and it's it doesn't have dockside fueling capability. Parking and staging is both congested and constrained. Some other issues are head taxes at both facilities. We don't know how the local government in either location is going to respond to their financing needs and that sort of thing. So when you boil all of that down, it comes up to about 6 of 1 and half a dozen of the other. We could operate just as well from either location if we get some of these things worked out. And no matter where we are, we'll have to work some of these things out. So if I may, Representative Hudson, we didn't say you can't do it. What we said is, you know, either way would work. In order to resolve the outstanding issues, what the department is proposing to do is either to request proposals from qualified ports, not necessarily just Bellingham and Seattle, or perhaps to just negotiate with interested qualified ports to see who, in fact, will give us the best deal for the Alaska Marine Highway System and the people of Alaska. The public input issue that Representative Gall raised a moment ago is important to us as well, and we will be soliciting that input both through the new Marine Highways Advisory Board as well as other public involvement processes as we go through the request for proposals. And as the proposals come in and there's something for the public to react to, we will definitely have that out.
But at this time, if people want to participate in the discussion, you recommend that they contact the advisory board?
Yes.
Do you have an address?
No. Care of the Marine Highway System, Post Office Box R.
Thank you, Brandon.
The key factors in a decision between the two ports or however many ports they are going to be quality and cost of the facilities, preferences of the user of the system, especially a good resolution of the issues that relate to commercial users and travelers who travel without vehicles, because there is definitely a convenience issue that needs to be addressed. And finally, we are working towards a decision as to a location somewhere in late summer or early fall, because again, our lease at Seattle expires in about a year, and we've got to get on with the decision-making process if the capital improvements that need doing in either location are going to have time to get done and that sort of thing. End of presentation.
Thank you very much. Let the record note that Commissioner Hickey has come in, finished his presentation with the Finance Committee. Did they beat you up too badly, Mark?
Not at all. They're very kind. Thank you.
I'm sure. Yes.
Before you go, I noticed one thing you stated in here, and I'd like you to think about this, is that everybody knows where the Port of Seattle Ferry Terminal is. You imply, at any rate, that it's a known factor and people know where it's at, things like that. And I'd suggest that the majority of people who are coming up on the ferry system from around America, at any rate, probably could give a damn less whether they're leaving from Seattle or Bellingham. And if they ever tried to get down to Seattle and all the roads torn up and the underground trying to be put in and people trying to get to the kingdom, they might just prefer to go on up to Bellingham. And only about 6 to 7% of the people actually come out of the Seattle area or out of that area there. And the other thing I'd like you to consider seriously is the marketing potentials of being not only an hour and a half away from Seattle, but an hour away from Vancouver and just a stone's throw away from Victoria. Because a good, strong marketing effort, I think at any rate, could fill this vessel enough on each end of the season so that Southeast Alaska communities would enjoy an extended tourism boost to their economy with 2 extra months. I really believe we could do that with a good, strong marketing program. So as you finalize this thing, or as we get on into what we consider the one we really want to write, I hope you'll think about those things.
I have one other thing to Mr. Miskowski. I discussed it with you before, prior to the meeting. On page 15, where you come up with, even with its attendant access difficulties, the present location of Pier 58 is in Seattle's a known quantity. This has to do something. Representative Hudson, I take exception to goodwill. I mean, that statement I don't think has any validity. being a frequent user of the Marine Highway system, not only in South Central Alaska, but always from Haines to Juneau, and also I think Mr. Davidson and Mark can tell you that I frequently go to Seattle. And as far as goodwill, it's hogwash. So I would like to have that goodwill, even in the business sense, as you said before. I don't see the goodwill. And I don't see where it pertains to this report.
I understand your point. Bad response. The point that was that we were trying to make fair is that for whatever it is a known quantity. There are some. Its reputation is established, and it has some positive value. Very little, perhaps, but some, and that will in fact be lost by relocating to Bellingham. And Bellingham will have to, the location of Bellingham would have to establish its own reputation at that point. And that's all the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, but I mean the term goodwill.
We could perhaps have phrased it better, and will.
Yeah, you might mention his leaking roof too. I'm sorry, I'm being facetious.
I mentioned that yesterday.
Did you?
I'm Chair.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Representative Pearson.
Thank you. And this may be just directed to the Commission, who's going to decide whether we do the RFP or whether we do direct negotiations, and when is that decision going to be made?
Mark, you want to speak to that?
Well, Representative Pearson, that's a decision, I guess, in my mind, for the department to make. And I think we've already 95% made it, that the RFP process is the proper way to go and a fair way to go. The only reason there's even a suggestion of an alternative is simply to at least think about it, preserve that option. And some of this is really my thinking as much as anyone's, if there was a strong orientation on the basis of the work to date to one particular facility over another, it might be best for all involved to simply talk direct negotiations. I don't know, as you can tell from the report, that we've come to that kind of conclusion. There's a lot in Bellingham's favor. There's some questions. Seattle will still continue to work. There's some problems. And I think my mind is, as I say, 95%, maybe even a little more made up, that the fair way to deal with this is to put the RFP out. It would not be structured so that only Bellingham or Seattle could respond. It might be, for example, Tacoma, if they're interested and are willing to look at it.
You're going the wrong direction, Mark.
I was thinking of Portland.
Up the river, huh?
Madam Chairman, I was thinking the other direction yesterday.
Madam Chairman, as a matter of fact, Don Austin of the Economic Development Board of Tacoma Pierce County called me on that subject this morning and rested a request that we got to the draft report. So.
But that's
they've indicated some interest.
And in terms of the timetable, I would expect fairly shortly, the next few weeks, that we'll be prepared to proceed.
Representative Hickey, I did ask that the draft. Oh boy, I really promoted you, Mark.
That's right, Mayor Jones.
What are you running for office?
Mayor Jones, in my task force meeting the other day, made me governor. So I.
Oh, okay. I'm not going quite that high. I did request to the department that we not lay these out to the man on the street unnecessarily. In as much as it does say draft, and a lot of people don't read draft. Would that go along with your thinking also?
Well, I understand the concern. It's our intent, Madam Chair, to have this finalized very quickly. We wanted to respond to legislative intent as best we could as quickly, and this was our way of doing it. I agree that the person on the street doesn't make the distinction very, very clearly. I think we can turn this into a final work product for us. It doesn't answer the entire question. I think we knew some time ago that this review wasn't going to. The issue was to see if there was something we were missing about looking at it in a detailed way. Clearly, we're not. There's a lot of things to suggest don't have to work, and now we need to get on with the process.
Yeah, Mark, when you get to that point where you're trying to ascertain whether or not you go out on a broad RFP or whether or not you consider one port versus the others, I hope you consider the cumulative time-saving potentials that and I mentioned this when you weren't here, that if you take 8 to 10 hours on the lower end on a round trip and 8 to 10 hours on the upper end, all of a sudden you've got 20 hours, almost a day, in which, in proper scheduling at any rate, might give a tremendous asset to, you know, to your transportation requirements there. And so that time, in my opinion, has never been given the proper value. Everybody's always looked at the cost of one versus the other and all of this business there. And so, see, I've always had that on my eye, was that time is valuable. It's reduced vessel time, which has a value for each hour that the ship runs. And it's an opportunity to modify your labor contracts that you won't have if you continue to operate out of Seattle. And those kind of values are probably even more valuable to the state of Alaska and to the Southeast Transportation System than simply whether or not people like to go one place or the other. Wherever the system operates, the people will write it.
Madam Chair, Representative Hudson, I think we recognize there certainly are values to that time savings, and not only to the system itself, but to the communities in Southeast and for other reasons in terms of the ability to have longer port layovers. So I think you'll see that factored in. I wasn't sure if I followed you. At least I understand the 8 hours or 10 hours which gets talked about, but I wasn't sure what you're referring to on the top end of the system in terms of
the stopping the mainliners at Juneau and providing a fast ferry to the north. Yeah, that's why when I put my thing together, I said this is a holistic approach. Right. You can't really consider one in a vacuum. You have to kind of consider a lot of different opportunities to really set this program for the future. See, vessel replacement costs as well.
And that is something, if I might just react to that for a moment, that without stating at this point, because I think it would be very premature to try and state what is the best solution to this particular question, that question. We agree entirely that the overall set of questions, many of which you've painted in your piece, need to be talked through and looked at. Now's the time to be doing that, and that these decisions, like the Southern Terminus location, should not be looked at and viewed in a vacuum. It's one of the reasons some of the time factor is stretched out a little, because when you start trying to look at all of these in relation to each other, it takes a little more effort. But I think that's a very important point that you're making. I agree with entirely to look at these relationships a little more closely. I'm not sure in the past that we did that as much.
Yeah, I know I didn't when I was over there. And I think, you know, I know there's a lot of extra work, particularly for George. But
we're cutting your time. Or is it important?
I'll be real quick.
Okay.
And you have not sent through all the rest of us kind of saying what our concerns about the draft report and the next report and so on and so forth. Mr. McAllister has, I guess when I look at your key factors in the port selection decision, I don't see here cost savings, but I do see users' preferences, and that goes directly to what Representative Galson, I'm sorry he's already gone, he said that he didn't think saving $68,000 on fuel was going to make his constituents in Hayes and Skagway and other villages throughout Southeast feel good, bad, or indifferent about whether or not it was moved. But I'm concerned when I see users' preferences and I don't see cost savings, because I can tell you that if you go to the users in Southeast Alaska and they say, do you want to stay in Seattle or do you want to move to Bellingham, they've never used Bellingham. They have no idea what it's going to be like. And a huge percentage of them are going to say, no, don't change it, because it's human nature not to like change. And I am concerned that I don't see cost savings as one of those key factors in the decision, but I do see users' preferences. So I want to make sure that those two things are balanced, because I can practically tell you what the statistics are going to be when you ask the question. Thank you.
Okay. Could we speed this up? We're shorting Bellingham on their time, and I don't think it's fair.
Madam Chair, could I make just
go ahead, George.
One statement just to clarify, to make sure there's no misunderstanding. One statement was made about the COMA. We envision, at least if we go out with an RFP process, that there'll be rewards given for certain advantages, and a shorter running distance will probably be one of the criteria that we'll be looking at, so that a Tacoma or, let's get ridiculous, a Portland need to be evaluated on the same basis as a Bellingham or a Seattle.
All right.
And nor will cost savings be big north.
Okay. We have with us a delegation from Bellingham. Who is going to do the actual presentation?
I think Don will go ahead and give an overview of what we have.
All right. We have with us Don Fleming, the director of Port of the Port Authority of Bellingham. We also have with us Bonnie McDade, who is from the Port of Bellingham. I would urge any of you to, and I'm sure that the Marine Highway has viewed her, Bonnie, help.
Videotapes.
Okay. Just having bought my first TV in 20 years, I'm not accustomed to this.
Disco tape.
Yeah, they're extremely valuable. Don, would you like to join us at the end of the table and give your presentation?
Thank you.
And don't feel pushed for time, because even though I have another meeting and Henry does too, we might be able to push it a little bit.
Okay, well I can probably summarize, because a number of things that we have done, you know, the ports in the state of Washington, and we're talking about the ports in general, even though I'm from Bellingham, I came from Long Beach, California, which a port which handles more tonnage than all the ports in the state of Washington. Strategy is something that I spend lots of time on, so I reflect, and my remarks will reflect that probably. It's a matter of positioning oneself, and whether you're in Seattle or Bellingham or Tacoma, which we know everyone, I do, in those ports, it's something which we must take a look at. Economic development and tourism are the thrust of the ports in the state. And so with that in mind, we in Bellingham, and I was not there the last two times this issue came up, as some of the members here have been, we have worked to improve our transportation infrastructure so that when that question comes up of the walk-on traffic, and I think that's been addressed already, the few walk-ons that occur, that issue I don't believe pertains to Bellingham because of the few visitors that are on the walk-on capacity. However, if one is in Juneau and one is going to Chicago and taking the Alaska Marine Highway System, they, in effect, if they came into Bellingham, and again, not being used to it, would be able in 10 minutes from the docking facility that we have, be at our airport, purchase the ticket to Chicago on United Airlines, which is at our airport, fly to and check your baggage through to Chicago, fly down to SeaTac and catch the jet to Chicago. We've been spending a lot of time at our airport. We're presently putting in $1.6 million to double the size of the terminal. That will be completed by May of this year. We have also approved the master plan for an 1,800-foot extension of the runway, which would enable us then to have direct flights to not only Juneau, but also to the Southern California area, which is a market that we have to look at. And we also have a control tower at our airport, which has been an interesting episode. In the last 8 months, we've went from a shutdown of the flight service station to a full tower at our airport to be in place by May of this year. One of the things that we would look at, and if I may, and trying to keep it informal, look at the chart that we have prepared here, because we have a committee that's working weekly. This is a big project for Whatcom County, and it's a major thrust for us. So we went ahead, and one of the architects in town said, well, one of my donations is I'll put together a schematic as fundraising and such continues in hopes of this project. And we agree with the Department of Transportation, and a lot of work that's been done on this request for proposals we're very comfortable with. But some of the things that we have adequate water depth, we have the rail transfer span that is in place, we would have to move an existing line, much of which is engineering. The warehouses that may have been listed as a disadvantage, there's three, one of which has cargo in it, and the others we move cargo around. We have no contracts because of the type port that we are. We are not a container port where you're going to lock up 35 acres for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. We just move the cargo, the aluminum, the wood pulp, the logs, and such as the need arises. We have everything from the recreational vehicle area, which we have felt would be a vital part of this because we're talking about economic development, people spending money in southeastern Alaska. The van staging, the car staging, and even the terminal building, which is designed here. It's all paved presently. The structure is in place with the exception of the passenger service building here and the relocation of the pipeline. So we have not viewed those as disadvantages, but they are issues and I'm sure concerns of the Department of Transportation, and that's understandable too. I guess this is a key part for us. We're very comfortable with this. I think as I think about economic development, and it's a point as a director of a port that is a key issue, is if I know that aluminum is going off our docks because it's going, because the rates are dropping on the westbound leg going back to Japan, and if I have some advanced time, I'm able to work and counter those rates, hopefully by tariff or et cetera. If the Alaska ferry, it seems like a bigger question is whether it's Bellingham or Seattle. A bigger question would be, and because this issue has come up, of Bellingham and the Alaska ferry, and there's headlines in the local paper, the Bellingham Herald, et cetera, there are other people talking to us simultaneously. Our real thrust is the Alaska ferry, as it has been a couple times before. But with additional cruise lines coming into the Northwest, and the statements that I've had that the ferry's full in the summer, but it's not full in the winter, then it seems like a real strategy question is, how are you going to keep the ferry full to handle the Southeast with the eggs and the supplies and things that need to be up there, and at the same time handle the, if this is an economic development tool for the state, if the ferry system is one of the, that's one of the charges, then it would seem to me one of the big tasks for getting Bellingham and Seattle is to maintain the competitive position of this ferry. And I think that goes back to what Representative Hudson and his holistic approach, a much bigger, broader concept than maybe what we're even talking about this term here. And that seems to be, from a strategy and a positioning standpoint, to me, a key point. In summary, we are definitely interested, needless to say, in this project. We are working towards it. We like the request for proposal. We feel it's fair. And we're prepared to go ahead with the project. If there's any questions, we will have to respond.
Representative Hudson.
First, for those that haven't been in Bellingham for some time, and I hadn't been there for really quite a few years, one of the big attractions to going into Seattle is the South Center and the North Center. Can you give just a little explanation of what's happening in Bellingham?
Sure. Well, one of the things that Bellingham can offer that Seattle, frankly, cannot, and this is a rarity because it just doesn't happen this way very often, an hour and a half's drive north or south of Bellingham, you've got 7 million people, and that does include the Vancouver area. We have a large population base, and so what happens is people ask us, well, how many people are in Bellingham? And you respond, 46,000. How many people are in the county? 116,000. I can assure you that a PSA, a US Air, or any of those, or hotel operations won't turn their head. They won't even look at you. So you have to take a much broader regional perspective. So enter 10 minutes from this facility, a million square foot shopping center, which will rival those in Seattle, will be completed in August of this year. The five majors have been named, and there'll be 120 stores that will be a part of this. It's General Growth of Iowa. It's a major project, and it is moving ahead in a rather big way. We still have the university with 10,000 students. There's a number of amenities that are in the Bellingham area. And I guess the ease and access of, as the airport has indicated, where we had a tremendous overflow during the Christmas holidays, and has caused us, as I know the ferry system here, to take a look at when you're jammed up as we are, how do we relieve the burden? And a lot of that's Canadian traffic, because we're so close, 20 minutes to the border. We're strong in our marketing, we're strong and aggressive, as is evidenced by a number of things. I should also indicate that's all done in-house with our existing staff. So we take great pride in that, and you have to, if you don't have the market, sometimes you have to create it, which we have had to do.
Are there further, Representative Pierce?
Two questions. Is there a major hotel close to the terminal area? And secondly, what's the closest terminus or terminal for the Washington State ferry system? Does the system come into Bellingham presently?
No, it goes to Anacortes.
Okay.
Although there has been discussion of a passenger-only ferry from Bellingham to the islands, where a half hour, they have to make a half hour north run in terms of, we're just reversing it. They're saying it's a little longer in, from their perspective, but Anacortes has no place to grow. If they're land, they're locked there in that position, so that's in the discussion stages. And the hotel that's close by, there is one major hotel, which was Holiday Inn, it's now Vendel's, they've changed the name. There's a number of others. We ourselves, because it's on port property, are involved in a 300-room hotel, which is 5 minutes from this site. It's in Squalicum Harbor, just within this bay. And we received the zoning on that last year. The environmental impact statement will go on our commission meeting next Tuesday. It will take about 5 to 6 months. And within a year and a half, because again there is interest, we look to have a hotel, trade center, retail, all on 10 acres, like I say, that's 5 minutes from this site, which could interface conveniently. But also say that the main line of Burlington Northern, which connects the ports of Vancouver, BC, Seattle, Tacoma, is right at our doorstep with a spur that goes into this site. Should in some time, I would not rule out the possibility of either Canadian Rail coming down with deregulation or Amtrak sometime coming back up, and we would build rail into this as a potential feeder.
So, would that rail go from Bellingham to Seattle?
Correct. Which the state aeronautical system has done a plan just recently as to what's the overflow, what's the feeder for SeaTac. SeaTac, the airspace is jammed, and the parking lots are jammed. So the reliever turns out to be Bellingham for both Vancouver and SeaTac. And we're feeling that right now more and more, Representative Hudson.
I'd like to bring up another point, too, that I personally did. And one of the things in some of the information you have sent us was the cost, the air cost. Let's say that I'm getting on Los Angeles and I want to go to Seattle. I don't remember the exact figures, $178. And then the additional air cost to Bellingham is exactly the same.
That's correct. It's a through fare.
Yeah, it's a through fare, exactly the same. So people flying into Seattle, going on to Bellingham, it wouldn't be any more money, is what I'm saying.
Correct.
And whereas, this might sound biased, but I think it was because of the fact that I had to do it, that I did a hands-on thing, and that was to go from SeaTac by shuttle down to downtown Seattle at, I think it was $15, and then go from Seattle, because there is no bus system down to the Marine Highway system. There isn't any air transport down to the highway system. So I had to get a cab then and go down to the Marine Terminal in Seattle. And I think what I'm pointing out here is the fact that for a traveler, now I'm not talking about Seattle area travelers, but for a traveler from any place else in the United States that might be coming to the Marine Highway, that cost is not any different.
No, most everything is a through fare. Should you be in Seattle and just decide you want to go to Bellingham, or someone's there and just staying there and they want to go up and catch the ferry, I know because I flew last week on PSA. It's a 21-minute flight, and it was $17 to go from Seattle to Bellingham. That's on PSA.
I think maybe I'm trying to brag about the fact I'm a hands-on chairman.
Thank you.
I think you do have an appointment at 3, am I right? Okay. I'd like to thank you very much for being here. And we're particularly happy to have Senator Anderson. I was particularly pleased to be able to introduce her to our house this morning. And although we had a not-at-ease situation, she did see what did occur on the floor of our house.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Not a heck of a lot, right?
Well, I think it was decorum, I wonder, see more than anything else. Yeah, is there any further business before the Transportation Committee? I would like to announce now that we will be giving our Representative Hudson a great deal of time on his holistic approach. I am very interested in it, and even though he didn't mention South Central, I think that report can be applied to South Central as well as
we should expand it to the west.
Yeah. So if there is no further business coming before the meeting, we are adjourned at 3 p.m.
Sure.
Do
you have any those that are in attendance that have other issues on the ferry system?
Thank you. Right. Anyone that's in attendance that has other interests on the ferry system, we will watch the schedule and we will be putting up, you know, the schedule.
Good, thank you. Thank you very much. I think you're getting a lot of attention. Well, we have to. You know, we've got to start doing something.
Yeah.
George needs our help. It's hard for the administration to make one of these things. Consensus. That's what I'm trying to do.